So what I want you to do is I want you to know real quickly a little bit about who I am, most importantly, so that you can feel confident about what it is that you need to do about your vote, because that's extremely important and where you want to go. So know this. I was raised in part by my grandparents in little Council Hill, Oklahoma. Does anybody know where Council Hill, Oklahoma is? Between Shakota and Muskogee? Anybody know where Oklahoma is?
Yep.
All right. So spent all my formative years in Oklahoma in the dairy with my cousins, the Eller family. I don't know if you know the Ellers from Oklahoma, but that was the best part of my summers because it's where we always were. And the reason I spent so much time there and in addition with my grandparents is because my dad was a welder. So I always wanted to be a basketball player at Jinx. And here's the deal. I topped out second team JV. Okay. That's me. But I love basketball. I love to watch basketball. But here's the thing. I claim all conference because in utero, my mom was all conference at Council Hill. And so I can claim to be all conference. All right. My mom and dad got married at age 18 in Council Hill, Oklahoma. A year later, when they graduate, we get in the trailer that's pulled behind the car and we drive to Toledo, Ohio. And Toledo, Ohio is where I was born. 15 months later, we go to Pierre, South Dakota. And that's where my brother is born. 15 months later, we go to Brownsville, Texas. 15 months later, we go to College Station. And that's where our lives completely turned upside down. My father was killed in a welding accident. He slipped and he fell. And when he slipped and he fell and was killed, Mom didn't have an education. She didn't have any vocational training. She didn't even want to take a breath because the love of her life was gone. And all she had was this little trailer behind the car and a little four-year-old boy and a little two-year-old boy. And I get emotional when I tell about it, not because I'm trying to pull sympathy or get anything else. It's just because it's still one of those things that's very raw because I see it happen all over the place. I see life change because of life circumstances that are totally unpredictable. And so Mom did what most everybody else would do. She goes back home. And she goes back home to her parents and my grandparents. And that's where little Council Hill comes in. And so what I want you to know is this. All my formative years growing up, here's how it went. My grandparents thought I hung the moon. Because I was kind of the proxy for my dad. And here's what they would say. And here's what my aunts and uncles would say. And here's what my cousins would say. And here's what friends would say. You look just like your dad. Oh, my gosh. Your dad was the best-looking man in school. You look just like him. Your dad was the smartest man in school. He would be so proud of you. Your dad could outwork a grown man when he was 13 years old. I'm telling you, your dad could outwork a grown man at age 13. And you look just like him. And I'm telling you, he'd be so proud of you. Well, I'm telling you this. When people pour into you when you're 4 and 5 and 9 and 12, and they tell you that kind of stuff over and over again, what it reminds you is that those things are really important. And when your granddad tells you on the farm, if I see your grandmother pick up a bucket of water, I'm going to spank you. You understand? My grandmother never picked up a bucket of water around us. She did wring chicken's necks, but I didn't do that, okay? I have an aversion to raw onions and cucumbers because grandmother would take the apron in the garden and say, oh, Bobby, you got to try this onion. It's so good. When you're 5 years old, you don't have a palate for a raw onion on a hot day in the garden, if you know what I'm talking about. So I don't like raw onions. I don't like cucumbers. But I love my grandparents. I was so devoted to them because they took care of us. And now as a grandparent, we raised this little 8-year-old grandson and this little 4-year-old granddaughter. And I know how deeply my grandparents devoted and energized and paid attention to me, just like we do with them. Now, they didn't raise us the same because it's a totally different era. I've never spanked my grandchildren, never told them I would because my daughter would pull me bald-headed. But all that to say, that's an important piece. But here's what I began to realize when I got to be about 16 or 17. It wasn't that big of a deal to be the best-looking man in school when there was only 3 other guys in your graduating class, okay? And it wasn't that big a deal to be the best athlete in town because, again, a very, very small school in Council Hill. What did stick with me is this. As a sacrosanct ethos that says hard work does matter. Your dad could outwork a grown man when he was 13 years old, and he could. And so when I haul hay, when you're a little bitty guy about 10 or 11 years old, and you're trying to buck hay, and your granddad's driving the truck, and you're begging to say, can I drive the truck, please, granddad, please let me drive the truck instead of having to buck these bales. And your cousins were out there. You didn't want your cousins to haul more and pick up more of the hay than you did. So I see some affirmation that people know what that means. Okay? Hard work meant a lot to my family, and it means a lot to me. So I can tell you this. I don't know if we're going to get to traject to this position or not, but there won't be anybody that works any harder or tries it more than we do. So I can tell you that first and foremost. I want you to know that part. Here's the other part that I want you to know. Because it's formative. I got married to Sandy Franklin. We've been married for 47 years. So when people say, do you know how to work collectively? Do you know how to stick with something? Do you know how to set a North Star and stay the course? I know what that looks like. Sandy and I had a big argument last night. We don't agree on everything. We really don't. But we know what our North Star is, and we know what our commitment is to one another. And so we stay with that through the thick and through the thin. And probably one of the thinnest was at age 24. She was a cheerleading coach. I just told a colleague over here, she worked at Scary when she first got her teaching job. Then she went to Broken Arrow, and then she went to Union, and then she ended up at Charles McCaskill School in Sand Spring. But a former English teacher and a counselor. So as an English teacher, what she did was, like most other people that are young educators, you do everything you can to get that first job. This was a different era because it was kind of harder to get a job. You also sign up to be the cheerleading sponsor, okay? And so with that, and I watched a lot of ball games over the years, lots and lots of ball games. And so in that era, in the 80s, we were at Broken Arrow. We had gone to about 4 basketball games that week, and I just felt something uncomfortable. It just didn't feel right. And so after a ball game, we're driving through Jinx's where we live because that's where my parents live. I said, let's stop at this night clinic. And we stopped at the night clinic. And so I'm thinking maybe I've got an infection or something and something's just not right. And anyway, we walk in and the lady checks and examines me. And she says, I'm not really sure what that is, but I want you to go see my urologist colleague tomorrow. And so I tell Sandy, I said, okay, she's a DO. She's a lady. It's a night clinic. She probably just got out of school yesterday. She probably doesn't know what she's talking about. In a different era, back in the day, my grandparents used to think that a DO was not as strong as an MD, but that was in a different chapter. That's not the way it is anymore at all. But that's what we do. So I call my parents and say, hey, listen, I've got this doctor's appointment tomorrow. And it happened to be at the Hissen Memorial Center, which is where I was a special education teacher. Okay? Special education teacher. And so it was the day of the Halloween party. Okay? The day of the Halloween party. And all the teachers and all the students were dressed up in costumes. And I knew I had a doctor's appointment, so I just wore my clothes wrong side out. So I knew what that felt like. So I could see it in my mind's eye as I'm talking to you right now. I go into the restroom at lunch. I turn my clothes right side out. I go to the doctor. The doctor now says, young man, here's what you've got. You've got testicular cancer. Don't touch that. We're going to have to get this removed. And I broke. I literally broke. And it went like this. We didn't have cell phones. I go downstairs and I get the payphone. I don't see any young people here. Are there many young people that remember payphones? Our old people, we all know payphones, right? Okay, we know that. But it was a quarter, so that was not that long ago because it used to be a dime. But anyway, and I called my stepdad and I said, Dad, they're telling me I've got testicular cancer. And I couldn't even get the words out of my mouth. We didn't drink, we didn't smoke, we didn't party around, we lived a healthy lifestyle. And I'm thinking, how do you get that? This is unreal. And my stepdad said the very same thing. He said, MD or DO? I said, Dad, I don't know what he is. Dad, he said, listen, you go to my urologist. We're going to get an appointment. My stepdad sets up the appointment for me. We go that afternoon, and he says the very same thing. He says, young man, you have testicular cancer, and we got to get that out of you. And so our lives changed again. I was teaching at the Hissen Memorial Center. I love teaching special education, and we did that very, very well. But all of a sudden, we end up going through a couple of really nasty surgeries. I end up, before it was done, it had spread to a mass And then they cut the aorta. It was a 12-hour thoracic surgery. And the doctors came in to my wife and said, we're going to do everything we can to save your husband. We just don't know if we're going to be able to get there. And so when you're a 26-year-old spouse and the doctors tell you that, and your preacher comes in from church and starts to pray, woo, there's something about that experience that seasons you. And I just want to say this part because I want you to hear this part of the story. Then we're going to talk about what we can do about our educational frontier. There's something about that experience that seasons you. So we go through 9 months of chemotherapy. We survive all of that. We get to a place. And the first time that we went outside, my wife said, I want to go to the mall. I want to go get some makeup. So I'm at the Dillard's counter at Woodland Hills Mall. I've got on a hat. I've got on a jacket. I weigh 125 pounds, and I have no hair anywhere. And I'm sitting on one of those stools that's a little bit taller, you know, at the makeup counter. So you've got the visualization. And what I did while she was, you know, looking for some makeup and stuff, I reached over to grab a tissue because my nose was running. And the little girl that was there, she said, Mommy, that mannequin just moved. And the mom panicked. She almost started crying. She said, hey, whoa, it's okay. It's okay. Babies are good. I do look like a mannequin, don't I, sweetheart? I said, I've been really, really sick. But I said, we're going to get better. I'll never forget that. I can remember the jacket. I can remember the hat. I remember all that. And the reason I'm telling you that, it's not because that's important for who your state superintendent is. What's important is this, is because I know in that season of my life, from that moment on, not that I do it well every day, what I have committed to is just that I'm not going to waste moments. I'm not going to waste moments on ugliness, disrespect, on lost energies. All I'm going to do is try everything I possibly can to say, I don't know why my dad didn't get to live beyond 24 and how I did. I don't know, but I do know this. I'm not going to waste moments, and I'm here to serve. And my faith reminds me you're caring for the least among us, that you're caring for the one who sent us. So if anybody in this campaign begins to shred at my faith, just remember this. Don't take my kindness for a weakness. That's not fair. And so many people say some really ugly things and disrespectful things about you personally during your journey on trying to become a state superintendent. I don't even know why we chose. Yeah, I do know why we chose to go at this. And now I'm going to get to the part of the story about what it is that I think is important about this journey. I was pulling for Rob Miller. You know the story about Rob Miller. You know that his wife passed. He's a dear friend of mine. I was thinking about running prior to that, talking with Rob Miller, because I just felt like somebody needed to run against Ryan Walters, whether I won or whether I lost. Because I've been kicked around a little bit, and I can take a lick. I just felt like even if I lost, somebody needed to speak against him and the way we were going down this pathway. And I was willing to do that, and so was Rob. But I ended up landing at OU, is where I am now, teaching at OU Tulsa. And it's an amazing, amazing opportunity. It's a lot easier to teach bigs than it is littles. You guys know that. They're working on their doctorate degrees. They're working on their master's degrees in school leadership. And I'm really proud of that. It's a dream job. And so I called Rob Miller and I said, look, Rob, I've got this job that landed and I'm not going to run. And he said, are you sure? I said, I am. I said, let's change shoes. You run. I'll cheer for you. We'll try and get behind you. And he was making great progress. And then everything flips upside down. So I said, are you sure you can't? And he said, I can't. So I called Lindell Fields. You guys know Lindell. Lindell's a colleague. Lindell's a great man. Lindell has done an amazing job of putting some salve on the wounds that are there. And I said, Lindell, can you hang tough, buddy? There's a lot of people that would love to see you stay in that race. And come on, you can do this. He said, well, I made a promise to the government. I said, people in politics break promises all the time. You can do this. And he said, well, I've got some goals. I need to do some things. But he said, listen, if you'll get through this window, I'll come and try and give you some consulting help, and we'll see if we can do this. And Rob Miller said, Robert, if you get through this window, I'll come and help. We'll do whatever we can. We'll collectively all work together. We'll join arms. We'll do whatever we can. We'll all work together. But you got to get through this window, and it's just a really narrow gap. That was 2 days before the filing period. I tell my wife, here's some things I want to talk about. And she says, close that window that Rob has talked about. close the one that Lindell has talked about. We don't need to do this in our lives. But what happens is, my daughter comes over, like we always used to do. We put the grandkiddos to bed, and we prayed, and we talked, and we went at it from 10:30 that night till about 1. And my daughter's question over and over again, she's a former special education teacher, now a counselor at Vertigo, so I'm very, very proud of her. Her name is Hannah, Hannah Rogers. And she says, Dad, with the condition and with the spirit that comes with my choke in my voice, she said, why would we do this to our family? We have this amazing job. We have these beautiful grandkids. We're living our best life. You and mom just made the last house payment 2 months ago on your house. What are we doing? Why would we do this? And my wife said, yeah, why would we? And we're in the bed and we just keep talking. We keep praying. And I said, look, we've been doing this stuff for 44 years. We've got this chance. And my fear is this. If we don't push now and we take a risk and the wrong person lands in that job, for the next 8 years, what on earth will we look at from public education? And what will my little grandkiddos that are in that bedroom in there, what will they feel? And what will they have opportunities? And Hannah says, Dad, you're not wearing a cape. And Sandy says, yeah, Robert, you're not wearing a cape. And I said, no, I'm not wearing a cape. But what I've got is I've got 44 years of friends and colleagues that I think we can work together. And we can get further together than we ever could by ourselves. And so they said, can we pray? And then get up in the morning and talk about it. So it's 1 o'clock. We go to bed. We get up the next morning. And my wife finally says, okay, here's the deal. Only if you promise that we will never, ever do this again if it doesn't work. And let's push hard. And I said, I vow. And friends, after 80 days of this nonsense, I promise you this. If this doesn't work out, you will never see my name on a sign again. I can promise you that. My colleague that I'm running against that's in the runoff, I don't want to be disrespectful to him, but he's done this 4 times. This is his 5th time to run for an office. I don't know how anybody could do that, but that's a different story for him to explain. But what I do know is this. I hope that you know this. I believe strongly in career tech because after being a special education teacher, I became an assistant principal at a junior high. I became a high school principal at Charles Page High School. I've worked as an associate superintendent for Sand Springs Schools, working on curriculum instruction and state assessments. Started alternative programming because I was frustrated with the way that we suspended young people back in the old days. I was that guy that the very first year I became an assistant principal was the last year our school district used to also give SWATs. So I've given SWATs to young people. Not that I'm really proud of that, but it didn't hurt them too bad. In fact, one young man about 3 weeks ago at a wedding, big time wedding, upstairs and downstairs, pouring down rain. We're getting ready to leave downstairs at this wedding. And my wife and a couple of friends were talking and this young man walks up. I say, young, he's probably in his 40s. He's got a big old beard, good looking guy. He's huge. And he said, Mr. Franklin, you remember me? And that's usually a funky start because you never know. Remember when I was in your office, I'm like, oh, help me out. Give me a name. And I said, look me in the eye. Because if you look him in the eye, you can kind of remember who they were. And he said, my name is Clint. I said, Clint Day, I got you. I got you, buddy. And my friend said, what did he do? What did he do? You want to get back at him right now? And he said, I'm married to this teacher right here, and we're going to vote for you. But he said, do you remember that day when I was in your office and you talked to my dad on the phone? Do you remember what my dad said? And I said, Clint, help me remember. And he said, Mr. Franklin, I had really screwed up in Mr. Bowman's class and made a whole lot of shenanigans. He said, I was really going down the wrong pathway. But he said, you always, always were engaged with us. You were very forthright, but you always set things really, really, really on the straight and narrow. And he said, I'm grateful for that. He said, I ended up having to go to the military to figure out why that was important. He said, I just need to tell you thank you. But he said, here's what Dad said. Dad said this, Mr. Franklin, we're not going to have the suspension option. You're going to give him the SWATs. But here's the deal. He said, you look like one of those kids. He said, you better make a count. And he said, save some of the AAAs for me when he gets home. And I'm like, okay. And he said, Mr. Franklin, you hit me so hard. I said, oh, Clint, I'm so sorry, buddy. I'm so, so sorry. And he goes, no, it was good. I needed it. And it got me squared away for that day. And I said, all right. So I say I've done that kind of work. I know what that looks like. I was at the Raider Treatment Center working with really, really hardcore, convicted, messed up kids. And I saw what that looked like. And I know how mental health works. And again, served as a high school principal, served as the associate superintendent at Tulsa Tech. And I'm proud of the business partnerships that we've done. We've got work to do, friends. If we don't figure out how to rebuild this teacher workforce, we're in deep trouble. And I think we can do that. There are models that we can work after. Union High School is doing a great job of that, of creating a teacher academy, the national teacher of the year. I'm not talking about the state teacher of the year or the building teacher of the year, although those are righteous. I'm talking about the national teacher of the year. Rebecca Peterson has 75 high school kids, much like we do in our career tech centers. She has 75 kids in a pre-teaching program. They've got a partnership with Northeastern. Every one of those kids shouldn't have to worry about their scholarship opportunities and should be plucked up, because on Mondays and Fridays, she teaches them pedagogy and she teaches them all of the tricks of the trade and how to work as educators. And then on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, they're out working with elementary school students. And it's a model. You guys have done parts of these kind of things. We do it every single day. We can scale these things and we can start to rebuild teacher workforce. I think we can also do some really bold things in how we perhaps even provide some tax vouchers for teachers. To say, you know what, we did an aerospace, we give aerospace engineers a tax voucher. Why? Because we really support and want to build the aerospace sector. If you've got a workforce crisis, start there. Start with the educators, and let's see if we can do some bold things differently to recruit and retain people. All right? I know how this works. We can do this effort together. We know that we've got to harness AI. We know that we've got to put some professional development in, but perhaps more so than we ever have before. And we know that we've got to build reading scores. We know that that work is at the forefront. We've done this before in 1990 with House Bill 1017. We know what class sizes look like. We know what putting extra supports in classrooms, putting in some teacher, some support, some counseling support, some behavior technicians to get teachers the opportunity to stay on tier one level instruction. We know what this work looks like, and we're committed to trying to do that. But yet there are forces that are working really hard against us. And so I'm going to give it a good shot. We're going to have to show up on August 25th and vote like it really means something, because this one does. This means a really, really big piece of the puzzle. So I want to field any questions that you might have, and then we'll turn it over. First and foremost, we won't be calling teachers' names. I can tell you that. We will not be calling teachers' names. Secondly, we will try to rebuild as strongly as we possibly can all of the folks that need to be at the State Department of Education, because right now it's kind of a shell of what has been there before in the past. There are a lot of folks who have left. There's a lot of folks in the grant department that are not even there anymore. So we've got to rebuild that support network. And what I would also say this is, I would want to partner with our career tech partners and with our higher ed partners and say, let's put some regional supports out into the field so that people that are out in the field, those reading specialists that we're talking about, those math specialists, so that those kind of people can be in the field and very, very closely connected to the work that needs to be done in far-flung Oklahoma. There's no doubt about that. So those things are very, very specific of what we would do. We would also bring stakeholders to the table. We would bring our tribal leaders to the table differently than we have in a long, long while. We'll bring our higher ed partners, we'll bring career tech partners to the table to say, let's figure out how we rebuild this teacher workforce pipeline together. Because that, it doesn't matter what the standards are. It doesn't matter how hard you cheer. It doesn't matter how hard you yell. If we don't bring the right people to the table and get a teamwork going here, we will not move. We will not move the needle. And I think we also have to figure out how to recalibrate the state assessment process. Those are big ones. Those are really big. Jason Waters, how do you feel about school vouchers? I feel about this. For the last 5 years, we've been on a tear in Oklahoma to broaden that, bigger and bolder than ever. Has really shown the outcomes that we intended for it to do. I think the answer is no. And so what I'm simply saying is, slow the roll. Study what we intended to say that we wanted to have happen. You can't keep flinging money at something and saying, I think it's making everybody happy because they're getting a tax voucher. Well, if that's the case, I've been bold enough to say, here's how you could do it differently. Instead of saying, you get $1,000 for homeschool, you get $5,000 based on your income, you get $7,500 for yours, you send your kid to public school, you get zero on your tax income. You really want to inject competition into this? You really want to make it a free enterprise marketplace? Stop doing it that way, and let's just up the child tax credit, and then you choose where you want to go. You use your tax dollars where you want to go. But no, a lot of people don't have an appetite for that. All I'm simply saying is, I don't think we continue to do the vouchers and expect to have a better outcome. Because the denominator of money that's coming in isn't really going to change a whole lot. What happens is the numerator at the top gets bigger. It's a math problem. More and more school options, more and more school places, much like a yogurt shop or a dispensary. You can put them on every street corner. You can put a school on every street corner. And at the end of the day, what's going to happen is those who need it the most will get the least. Those who need it the least, if we're not careful, wrong people in wrong seats will start getting the most. And that's a problem. That's a problem. Okay, the good thing is the legislature gave us a head start. They kicked in a lot of additional resources. They kicked in the initiative to say we need to get the right screeners in place to begin to intervene as early as we possibly can. That is not a new phenomenon because we have done this back in the 90s and we've done it at different times with Literacy First. Many of you have known Literacy First and you worked on that initiative and you pushed on those things. I've done that work. It is not easy to train a teacher to be a really, really good strategist with teaching reading. It's not just because you love literacy and it's not because you just love children. There's a science. And so we invest in the science of teaching reading and the state has kicked this up. And so we just got to get the right people in the place and get some of those service centers. So this at 23rd and Lincoln, it's at the doorstep and we use technology to our advantage so that teachers can really have that science of reading and we can get to a fewer number of screeners that we're using and then use the content so that we share the content with one another and share best practices with one another. This is a really big deal. We can't turn our back to the fact that the NAEP scores are 50th. So it's real. So we're going to have to really be targeted and focused. And my hope is that the legislature and you in your areas can hopefully tell your legislators, slow the roll on many other initiatives. Let us take a breath and start pushing on the literacy initiatives that are right here at our doorstep and our math issues right here at our doorstep. Let's focus on that really, really intentionally and see where we can go. But it won't be just at the littles, because if we don't scaffold in the middle school, we're in deep trouble. So that's also going to be a really big part because the middle school does matter.
I hate to cut the questions off, but Dr. Franklin is going to be here till about 9:20, 9:15, about 30 more minutes. And then we're going to get his car off from being impounded. Great guy, might have parked illegal. You don't know. But if you can be around, come have a conversation with him, ask him the questions, and then we'll get you out of here on time, and we appreciate your time. Thank you all.